We have our next segment, which is really something I'm very much looking forward to. We have Marianne Williamson, who is going to be with us for the next few minutes. Hey, yes,
for now, great to see you again. And Tricia, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's such a delight. I'm really very, very thrilled to meet you as well. And I just want to quickly remind everyone, although we don't need any reminders, that Marianne is a fantastic writer, a speaker, thinker about spiritual matters, and the now has a new podcast, the Marianne Williamson podcast, called Conversations That Matter. And she was a 2020 presidential candidate in the Democratic primary. So we have lots to ask you, and your conversations with us, we're hoping ours will matter too here. We just wanted to welcome you to the tightrope and just, you know, get your sense of what you think is going on tonight. What's your take? Where we are in this horse race?
There are two storylines. One is that which is going on tonight, and we're living it. So we're in the middle of it right now. We can't really process it because we don't know exactly where it's going. But the other story is the one that you've already been talking about in the last half hour that I've been listening. The things that Eddie was saying, the things that Anthony was saying, the things that Cornell is always saying. And that's that we are seeing the absolute electoral, political, and intellectual bankruptcy of neoliberalism. If Biden wins tonight, I think it's fair to say he will pretty much squeak by. There will be no landslide. And so I think that the pendulum's going to turn. Pendulum's going to swing, and I agree with everything that Eddie was saying. Maybe the Democratic Party will think in terms of playing to its own base and not peripheralizing progressives anymore and stop this delusion about trying to capture the old Reagan Democrats and really give an opportunity for people such as, I agree with what Anthony was saying about the South. I come from Texas. You know, when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, he said, we just lost the South for a generation. He didn't say we lost the South for 40 years, but the Democratic Party just packed up and left. And the progressive energy, the progressive Shakti, the progressive ecstasy is with the left within the Democratic Party. And you know, when you said before, Tricia, you were saying, you know, the question is exactly what the neoliberals would have us think, which Bernie is too extreme. Bernie has conviction. That is what wins elections. People like some energy. They like some conviction. Yes, it's true that the Republicans don't walk their talk, but the Democrats don't talk their walk. The corporatist neoliberal is, even when they try to say something deeply, authentically true, sounds disingenuous because they are. You know, one of the things I said throughout my campaign was that the only way to defeat big lies would be with big truth. The Democrats tell the truth, but too often what the corporatist neoliberals do is they tell the truth, but they don't tell the whole truth, and they don't say nothing but the truth. And that is what is going to win back the heart of America for the left. Let's say it like it really is, that the economy is rigged, which you guys know anyway, but the authoritarian populists are saying it's rigged one way. The progressive populists will tell you how it's really rigged. The Democratic Party will admit the part that it's played. Let's get real. Let's tell people what's really going on. Let's hold people to the idea that we can do politics from a noble and intelligent place. And then I believe the Democratic Party will get its power back, or the left will get its power back, whether in Cornell, you and I have been in a lot of conversations, whether that means the Democratic Party or a third party, I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, my dear sister and I were with Brother Nick Browner with the People's Party, and we had a similar kind of conversation for hours about this. It was very, very rich. But it raises a question, though, is if the neoliberals in the Democratic Party told the whole truth, they would have to lay bare their connections to Wall Street, lay bare their connection to Pentagon militarism, and lay bare their connection to the fossil fuel industry, the big farm, private insurance companies. And therefore, they couldn't pose and posture like their populist in a progressive way. See, Bernie was the only one who could do that. The squad is one of the few who can do that, you see. And so there is a sense for them to want to, hide and conceal and disguise who they really are in terms of their donors, their benefactors, their financial sources, as it were. And that's also one of the reasons why I think so many of our fellow citizens, some of whom seem to have voted for Trump, is why they have this contempt for neoliberal elites. And I don't think it's just the politicians. I think it's contempt for neoliberal elites in the academy, in the churches, in the media. It's across the board. They see complicity. They see a certain kind of deference paid to the neoliberals in the Democratic Party so that there's no truth telling for them among those cultural elites, among the celebrities and others who want to dance with the neoliberals and act like somehow they build it on the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. You say, please spare me. We were born at night, but not last night. People can see through that now, though. But let's say something, but let's raise a question, though, about the relation between this kind of a social analysis you have, with which we deeply resonate with, and then the spiritual and the moral dimensions that you also bring, because you're not solely concerned about the spiritual, you make the connection, but the spiritual has to play a crucial role, though.
Well, spirituality is the path of the heart. You can make the bottom line organizing principle of your society short-term profit maximization for huge multinational corporations, or you can make the guiding principle love, mercy, compassion, inclusion, equality, and justice. Those are aspects of the face of God. You can't have both. And so, as John F. Kennedy said, we cannot afford to be materially rich, but spiritually poor. We have become a nation spiritually impoverished. And when you do not see love as the reason you're here, it's not only that people suffer. That's really what this is all about, is about human suffering. When you have short-term profit maximization for huge multinational corporate entities, the bottom line of public policy, then you get what we've got. You get a society where 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%, where even before the pandemic, 40% of all Americans could not afford a $400 unexpected expenditure, where millions of American children go to school every day in schools where they don't even have the adequate supplies and ability to teach a child to read. And if a child cannot learn to read by the age of 8, then the chances of high school graduation are drastically decreased, and the chances of incarceration are drastically increased. Where you have a private prison industry, the prison industrial complex, where just like with oil companies and just like with defense contractors, there are industries building market share of huge amounts of human suffering. They are making billions of dollars off the creation and the maintenance of human suffering. You can't talk about spirituality without talking about the need to address human suffering. And we don't have an economic system where CEOs wake up in the morning and say, how can I hurt a child today? But we do have an economic system where CEOs wake up in the morning and do not feel that it's their responsibility to think about that child one way or the other. It is a morally neutral, it is an amoral economic system that inevitably produces immoral results. And then when you have a government, I'm not telling you two guys anything you don't already know, but when you have a government that is merely handmaiden to that, then you're off the spiritual rails because the heart is not factored into anything. All that's factored in is how are the insurance companies going to make more money? How is Big Pharma going to make more money? How the gun manufacturer is going to make more money? How the chemical company is going to make more money? How are the food companies going to make more money? How is big agriculture going to make more money? How are the fossil fuel companies going to make more money? And how are defense contractors going to make more money? How's telecom going to make more money? How are the banks going to make more money? And every time that you ask that question, particularly the way it is today, where you have a government that is handmaiden to that, which has become little more than a system of legalized bribery, then this is blood money we're talking about. Because that old famous quote from, it was actually a Republican senator, I think, or else it was Eisenhower, I'm not sure, that every bomb that's built is a school that's not built. You know,
That was Eisenhower. Right. January 1961. Last speech he gave.
Exactly. Well, somebody was saying recently that you could look at the economic policies of Eisenhower today, and he'd look like Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah, they call him socialist communist.
So
oh, yeah.
Far to the right. We have the U.S. Air Force. I don't know if you and I have ever talked about the B-21 Raiders. You know, the U.S. Air Force has ordered 100 B-21 Raiders. Each one costs more than $500 million. And the thing about the B-21 Raiders is that they carry not only conventional bombs, but also nuclear bombs. We're going to spend over $500 million on each, on 100 airplanes. Each one carries nuclear, has a capacity to drop a nuclear bomb. Now, five of those, you're talking about the end of human civilization as we know it. 10 of those, and it's over for the human race for several hundred thousand years at least. This has nothing to do with our national security. Think what that $500 million of even one of those would do for schools in these disadvantaged domestic war zones around this country. Think what that money would do to cancel the $1.5 trillion college loan debt, to provide tuition. You're talking about the Trump winning, or Trump even being as supported as he is. The main difference is between college-educated and non-college-educated people. This should be a motivation for educating your people. Think what that could do to provide Medicare for all. The whole thing has become so corrupt and so rotten to the core. And that's why people like you are important, both of you. That's why people like Eddie saying it like it is. That's why people like Anthony saying it like it is. And I think we can all go to sleep at night feeling like, well, at least we're saying it. We might be peripheralized, we might be scolded, but you know what? The pendulum's going to swing in our direction. I remember when I was young, and I remember a time when people said Ronald Reagan would never be president because he was too conservative. But you know what the Republicans do? You know what the right does? If they say something and you don't like it, they say it again. The corporatist neoliberals, if they say something and you don't like it, they scurry over to see if maybe John Kasich will like what they say.
I hear you.
Am I wrong? Well, no, because you're somebody I have to be wrong. No, if you tell me I'm wrong, I think about it.
No, you're telling the truth. You're telling the truth. My dear brother Marlana Karenga say, rescue me if I'm wrong. Well, no, you don't need no rescue. But you're telling the truth. Very, very much so.
You know, why do you think that the neoliberals are so soft on these issues, and they're not able to capitalize on the kinds of fire that we see among conservatives and the push to such a right-wing agenda? I mean, it seems pretty obvious. You know, why hasn't anybody really tried it? I mean, obviously Bernie has, and so have you.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're for the
but,
reason
but
that
down
they're
the ticket, up. Right? Down the in all these other races, right? You don't see
it. Okay, let's look. First of all, the reason we know what the reason is exactly what Cornell said, because they're taking the money from those corporations also, their donor class. That's why they don't. So you have this corporatist elite. And they have a pre-prescribed narrative. They have a pre-prescribed narrative, which is that which they feel will still satisfy their elite. See, what happens is the Republicans, as we know, have been bought hook, line, and sinker by this corporatist mentality. And they have no shame around it because they really believe it. The Democrats, you know, they wring their hands. They're like the mother who's really upset that the father is abusing the child, but she's not calling the police. So the Democrats are really upset about all the human suffering that it causes, but they will not challenge the underlying forces that create all that suffering, because all those underlying forces are giving them the money as well. Now, they, and I know this, I ran for president. It's not just seeing what happened to Bernie. I've seen how it works. If you try to have a conversation, you mentioned, as my experience on the debate stage, you mentioned Latin America, you mentioned food policies, you mentioned reparations, you mentioned economic justice, they're coming after you within 3 days. They have a pre-prescribed conversation. They have a pre-prescribed set of people that they feel that they will let in. The rest of it is performative. It's all performative in both 2016 and in 2020. right? Now, this is the even worse problem, and this is heartbreaking to me. They do the same thing on the congressional races. There are such wonderful people not only trying to run for president, there are such wonderful people trying to run for Congress. Look what happened. Look what happened with Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Here is Chuck Schumer, this corporatist neoliberal from New York, and he thinks he knows who can beat Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Meanwhile, progressives in Kentucky, Democrats in Kentucky, were ablaze with Charles Booker. They knew the energy was with Booker. And Charles Schumer comes down there with his unbelievable war chest because Democrats all over the country just wanted to beat McConnell. They didn't know. They just listened to Schumer. So they don't just do it on the presidential level, they also do it on the congressional level. That's why you have Hickenlooper rather than Andrew Romanoff. Now, fortunately, Hickenlooper did win, but you had a real progressive running for that Colorado Democratic nomination in Romanoff. It's why you have someone like Sarah Gideon running in Maine against Susan Collins rather than a Betsy Sweet who really carried the progressive fire. So we know where the problem lies. You know, we know where the problem is. We need to stop pretending like we don't know where the problem is.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Tell me if I'm wrong.
Rescue her, Giro.
No complaints over here. No complaints over here.
It's fun to be inconvenient, isn't it?
Sister Marianne, she was the only one raised issue of reparations that Sister Yvette and Brother Tone of ADOS and other organizations been highlighting, especially those two in the organization. It's a question again of truth and justice. We not talking about all these other issues around it. We talk about telling the truth about the American past and making sure there's some kind of moral response to it in the form of whatever monies, programs, whatever it is. At least hit it head on, and you were the only one to raise that actually.
Well, that's because looking at it from a spiritual perspective, you know, it is a universal spiritual themes that you have to clean up the past before you can go forward. You know, Catholics go to confession. The Jewish holiest day of the year is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. When people go to Alcoholics Anonymous, they have to admit their character defects. You know, when you look at Germany, the war was over in 1945, and Germany has done full-on mea culpa. No one can say it hasn't. And it's also paid $89 billion in reparations to Jewish organizations. That has gone far towards the psychological and emotional reconciliation between Germany and the Jews of Europe. That war was over in 1945. Our war was over in 1865. And we're still passing a baton of toxicity generation to generation. Because we haven't completed the job. And this is holding back white America as much as it's holding back Black America on a moral level. And it will serve all of our children to just complete the process. I'm not in any way diminishing what any of our ancestors have done. We did desegregate. We did pass the Civil Rights Act. We did pass the Voting Rights Act. But in some ways, we're sliding backwards. And when it comes to the economic issue, we simply have not taken on the problem. And once
we've not even really stopped the war on Black people, right? Which one could make the claim that, you know, Germany at least officially stopped that war, right? At that point. But let me ask you a question before you, I think, have to go, I've been told. You've been quoted as saying that anger, I love this quote, anger is the white sugar of activism and that it's a good rush, but it doesn't provide nourishment. Can you speak a little bit about that? And what would be, in your mind, the most nourishing fuel for long-distance activism? You know, what if it's not anger, what would it be?
It's the broccoli of love. It's a love for what could be. You know, anger is as you said, it's like an adrenaline high. But then you crash. It's like white sugar of political activism. And something that all three of us know, and that sometimes I think younger people are just learning, is we have to be in this for the long haul. This is not something that's going to, you know, this is a lifetime process. serving the ages to the best of our ability. So we're not going to win every fight. We're not going to win every race. You just keep going. And for that, you need nourishment. And that is where love comes in. It's love for the possibility of democracy, love for the possibilities of justice. You know, in the Talmud, the Jewish Book of Wisdom, it says, you were not obligated to complete the task, but neither are you permitted to abandon it. That, to me, is nourishment, that you are here, once again, in Judaism, tikkun olam, you are here to repair the world. You are here to repair the breach, right? To the repairers of the breach, as Reverend Barber says. You are here, as Martin Luther King said, to inject a new dimension of love into the veins of human civilization. That's nourishing inspiration. And you're looking beyond just even one generation. You are serving your ancestors. You are devoted to your great grandchildren. And it just takes you to a place where maybe the highs aren't necessarily all that high, but the lows won't be all that low either. You're in a Gulf Stream that has to do with the journey of history. You're serving the idea, not just a short-term project. And you know that the arc of justice, that the moral universe, is long, but it does bend toward justice. And you are just, any generation is just the latest line. We're on the same train that our ancestors were on, and we know where we're going. And that, to me, is what it means to serve from a more nourishing place. And it also, I believe, and I definitely feel this with you, Cornell, and Tricia, you and I are just meeting, but those of us who recognize in one another that's that train, it's not transactional, it's relational. It's deep, it's rich. It's something that the alliance, you know, in the I Ching, it says even thieves have alliances, even thieves have allies. We need more than allies. We need deep soul friends. And that's what many of us are finding in each other. And something beautiful, I think, is happening right now in this country that way.
Well,
oh, those words, of great wisdom and hesed. And you bring wisdom and hesed together, that's leaven in the loaf. That's yeast that expands all of us. We thank you so very much, our dear sister, for taking out on this historic night and sharing these words and vision.
Thank you, darling.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure to meet you and to hear you and, you know, to think about, you know, how we can, what we need to do to get out of this mess, because we're definitely in one, but it's nice to know that people with your level of reflection and commitment feel so confident that we're going to find our way. So
right back at you, and we're not stopping now.